This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Congressman Justin Amash is seeking his third term in the U.S. House. He represents both Battle Creek and Grand Rapids in the 3rd District. He faces a primary challenge this year from businessman Brian Ellis. Justin Amash joins us at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in downtown Battle Creek. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
And we're also joined today by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thanks for having me.
Justin Amash, why don't you begin by briefly telling the audience a little bit more about yourself, in case they don't know, and what you'd like to do if you had another 2 years in the U.S. House.
Sure. I was born in Grand Rapids, have lived in West Michigan pretty much all my life. I attended the University of Michigan, so that was really the only time I was outside of the West Michigan area for a very long period. My parents are immigrants. I am part of the first generation of my family to be born in this country. When I was a kid, my dad really instilled in us a sense of appreciation for the American way of life, for our system of government, for the fact that anyone can come here and succeed and provide for their family. My dad was a refugee, so he had a tough time growing up. And I went to Michigan Law and became a lawyer. And while serving as a lawyer, I decided that it was important I step up and do something to protect the way of life that our founders put in place and that my dad struggled to provide for our family by bringing his family here when he was just a kid. And so I ran for the state house, served in the state house for one term, started to explain every vote I took on Facebook, and thought that that kind of transparency and accountability would be helpful in Congress. So when the seat opened up for the 3rd Congressional District, I ran for Congress and won that race. And I've never missed a vote. I explain every single vote I take using Facebook at facebook.com/RepJustinAmash. And I follow the Constitution and believe in limited government, economic freedom, and individual liberty. And for me, it's not about being a Republican or a Democrat. It's about doing what's right for ordinary Americans. And that's really been my focus as a congressman.
Jennifer Bowman, first question for Justin Amash.
I want to start with a recent editorial by the Grand Rapids Press. It criticized your declining to debate with Brian Ellis. Is there any concern if you decline to debate that it may dissuade undecided voters? Or, you know, when can you determine that your opponent is a credible candidate?
Well, we've seen the kind of race my opponent is running. It's been a smear campaign for about 8 or 9 months. There's been no effort on his part to actually present any ideas or issues. He's just been distorting my record. And I have worked hard as a congressman to be as transparent and open as possible. So my record has been an open book. I'm the only congressman in the history of the country who has explained every single vote he's taken. That actually takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, but I think it's very important that our constituents know how we're voting and why we're voting. So I stand behind my record. I know that my constituents have access to it. They can see every single vote. And I hold a lot of town halls, more town halls than the rest of the Michigan congressional delegation. And my town halls are always open to the public. I don't screen any questions. We don't take questions on note cards. People can come to the town hall and raise their hands and ask anything. And certainly if Brian Ellis had any concerns over the past few years, he could have come to any town hall and asked me any question, and I would have been happy to answer. But he's not really interested in that kind of discussion. He's interested in a smear campaign. And if you hold a debate with him, he's just going to continue with his talking points. And you are really beholden to how the media presents the debate, because it's not going to be widely viewed. It's not like a presidential debate where everyone's going to see it and see the differences between us and see whether the questions were fair or whether both sides presented issues. It's going to be a small story in the newspaper or just a brief coverage on Wood or WWMT.
When you say smear campaign and distorting your record, give some specific examples of things that he has said that are counter to your actual record in Congress.
Sure. For example, he attacks me on pro-life issues. I'm 100% pro-life. And he has taken one vote from last term out of context and try to present it in a way that is not an accurate representation of my position. He attempts to allege that I'm in favor of something horrific, sex selection abortions. Obviously, I don't favor any abortions, and I'm 100% pro-life. And to do that is really despicable, in my opinion.
But Right to Life of Michigan also endorsed Brian Ellis in part because of that vote. So can you explain a little bit more about why you did not vote explicitly for that bill, which would have banned abortion for sex selection?
Yeah, and I voted on many pieces of legislation to restrict abortion. I believe that life is important from conception. And on that particular vote, they inserted language into the bill that would have put a doctor, nurse, counselor in prison for failing to report that that person suspects that another doctor has performed an abortion. And that's a crime of inaction. It's a thought crime. And in this country, we don't put people in prison because they didn't do something. We put people in prison when they actually commit the crime themselves. So I'm 100% pro-life, but I would never put an innocent person in prison because they overheard at some event that maybe another doctor had performed an abortion and they didn't report it to authorities.
The other issue that Right to Life had was the vote present on defunding Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Well, explain that vote, please.
Yeah. The rule of law requires us to write legislation that is generally applicable. You don't write legislation to benefit or harm one person or entity. And I offered a suggestion to our leadership team and to Right to Life that they change the language to apply to all abortion providers. So no taxpayer funding for any abortion providers. And that's always been my position. I don't believe in any taxpayer funding for any abortion providers. They rejected my suggestion. I suggested as an alternative, because they insisted on keeping the name Planned Parenthood in the legislation, I suggested as an alternative writing the language so it says Planned Parenthood or any other abortion provider. And they rejected that as well. And the reason they rejected it, they told me, was because they wanted to make an example of Planned Parenthood. And we don't write legislation to make examples of people. We write legislation to do things. And if you don't support abortion, as I don't support abortion, you write the legislation so that it's broadly applicable and so that it's not an arbitrary piece of legislation that is just a vendetta against one organization. I don't support any taxpayer funding of abortions. So no abortion providers should receive taxpayer funds.
Jennifer.
Ellis has criticized your efforts in reforming NSA practices, something actually that you've received bipartisan support for. But in his latest ad, I'm sure you're aware, he's you've been called Al-Qaeda's best friend. His criticism is that your reform prevents monitoring of terrorist activity in other countries. Any concern? Is that a fair criticism?
The ad is despicable, and I don't think he's getting anywhere with it. He's actually pushing something that nobody else in the country is pushing, which is a reauthorization of the Patriot Act with no reforms. The vote he cites in that ad is a vote that I took against reauthorizing the Patriot Act. Well, the NSA has used the Patriot Act to spy on ordinary Americans. So when he's talking about monitoring foreign terrorists, he's just using that as a broad overview of what the Patriot Act was supposed to do, when in fact it's being used to monitor ordinary Americans. So unless he considers ordinary Americans to be foreign terrorists, his ad is deceptive and frankly quite disgusting. If you ask people at home, do they support what the NSA is doing, the vast majority on both sides of the aisle will say no, they do not, especially on the Republican side, frankly. So he's trying to cover it with language of terrorism and all the rest. But what he's really saying is that he supports NSA spying on ordinary Americans, because that's what the vote was about. And I voted to stop that.
Can you kind of give us a sense of how we have a fairly secure nation in, you know, in the now over 13-plus years since or almost 13 years since the terrorist attacks of 2001. I mean, that's still a great concern. How do we have a fairly secure nation and still respect people's privacy and civil liberties? How do you see the government striking that balance?
Well, the balance is already struck in the Constitution. And we're fortunate to have a Constitution that protects our rights but also protects the lives of Americans. If the government wants to search our records, it needs to have probable cause and a warrant. And that's been consistent in our Constitution since that amendment was put in place. So we should respect the Constitution, respect people's rights, and that will provide for a stronger, safer America. If we give up those rights in the interest of security, sure, you could reduce all crimes and reduce all threats by having a total police state and a total surveillance state, but you would have no freedom.
Related to that, under what conditions should Congress authorize the use of force in foreign countries?
The only situation would be if the United States or our interests are in imminent danger. There might be rare occasions where there is an attempt by one country to commit mass genocide against a people who are totally defenseless, and there's not sort of equivalent force on both sides in which the United States or other countries may have to step up. But in those cases, it must be – and in all cases, it must be authorized by Congress. You can't have the president insert our military into foreign conflicts without congressional authorization. But in most foreign civil wars where you don't have a huge disparity, where it's not just a clear attempt at genocide, the United States should not enter into those conflicts because it's not really in our interest.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Congressman Justin Amash. He represents both Battle Creek and Grand Rapids in the 3rd U.S. House District. We are speaking with him at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in downtown Battle Creek. We're also joined by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman. Jennifer.
Your reputation, which I think is attractive to your supporters, is you don't really play the game, if you will. You have no problem upsetting your Republican colleagues. Some say that's a good thing. Others say in order to be an effective representative, you might have to compromise on some things. Do you think the way that you go about it, this not playing the game, does it do a disservice to your district, or is it the way to go?
Well, I would challenge the premise a bit. I am independent. I don't play the game. That's absolutely right. My job is to represent everyone in my district, not just one party. When it comes to compromise, I've worked hard to compromise on a number of issues. I've tried to bring the parties together. I've tried to unite people within my own party along a variety of issues. An example would be a balanced budget amendment where I've worked hard to bring Democrats on board with my balanced budget proposal. On NSA spying, I brought Republicans and Democrats together to support the Amash Amendment. And recently we got a Massey Amendment through Congress to protect people against a certain type of NSA overreach. That was a bipartisan effort that I led the charge on. And on Syria, I really led the effort with Democrats and Republicans to prevent the president from going to war in Syria. So I've worked hard on a number of issues to bring the sides together. And what's often described as compromise in Congress is not actually compromise. So it's true that I've opposed several of these phony deals that the two sides strike. For example, when we're dealing on budget issues, both sides recognize that we have to cut spending, that the debt is out of control. But when it comes to the kinds of deals they make, instead of compromising to cut spending on both sides, they compromise to increase spending on both sides. Well, that's not a real compromise, in my opinion. That's like a household where the husband and wife are spending too much, and they say, "Hey, our credit cards are maxed out, and we've got problems with our mortgage. We've got to do something about it." And then they agree, "Let's both spend more." That's not a compromise. That's a failure of leadership. That's a failure to actually negotiate. Those are just phony deals. And in Washington, they cut those things all the time. And when I stand against those, sometimes the establishment and sometimes the media who aren't paying attention enough think that I'm opposing compromise. But I'm actually opposing the lack of compromise. I believe the two sides need to come together on those issues and need to address them, but they don't. And that's unfortunate.
Specifically on the balanced budget amendment, Brian Ellis was critical of you for voting no on what was finally in front of the House. Now, you said that you had a better idea, but, I mean, what was wrong with what was there? If it's a balanced budget amendment, why not at least, as he says, represent the 3rd District and vote yes for on behalf of your constituents?
Because that balanced budget amendment would have led to tax increases. It was a balanced budget amendment that wasn't well drafted. Paul Ryan, the chairman of the Budget Committee, opposed that balanced budget amendment. He joined me in voting no on that balanced budget amendment. And we've had other votes on balanced budget amendments. There was another vote that was a part of cut, cap, and balance, where a more conservative balanced budget amendment was offered, and I supported that balanced budget amendment. I've also worked on my balanced budget amendment, which is a bipartisan proposal, which has more Democratic support than the proposal that went before Congress. And I'll continue to push that effort. If you're going to get a balanced budget amendment through Congress and through all the states, because it has to be ratified, you have to have a proposal that both Republicans and Democrats agree to. And unfortunately, the proposal that we had in front of us would not have gotten bipartisan support across the states, and it would have led to tax increases.
We are speaking, I should note, on July 1st. So yesterday, the Supreme Court handed down its decision regarding Hobby Lobby and the Obamacare mandate. You went on Facebook and said that you welcomed the decision, and you said you would continue pushing free market reforms for healthcare. Can you spell out some ideas that you believe would work, that would promote free market and also address the concerns people have that healthcare costs are going up too quickly and that there are many people who don't have access to quality healthcare?
Yeah. First, any healthcare reform should really happen at the state level, not at the federal level. The Constitution doesn't provide for federal healthcare or a federal healthcare system. So the reform should really happen at the state level, and states should compete with each other for the best healthcare system that they can provide. What you really need to do is align costs and benefits. The problem with our healthcare system, the biggest problem, is that nobody knows the cost of anything. When a person goes to the doctor, they know that they've just got insurance coverage, and they're not sure how much any procedure costs, how much any medication costs. And surprise, surprise, neither does the doctor. And when you have a system like that, you are bound to have healthcare costs grow exponentially. So you need a system where people don't have insurance coverage for the most basic things, where they have to pay out of pocket for that portion of it, for a basic doctor's visit for the sniffles. But you have coverage for things that are actually going to be catastrophic to them, very difficult for them. That's the point of insurance. The point of insurance is to deal with situations where the people are not expecting it to happen but want to have coverage in case it happens. And if you have an insurance system like that where people know the costs, know the benefits, know what they're paying for, you can bring down healthcare costs. But under Obamacare, what you're doing is just shifting the costs around, and it's actually more disguised than it was before. You have to, under Obamacare, either reduce benefits somewhere, perhaps for people who are older, or you have to increase the cost. You can't provide coverage to everyone without doing one of the two things under Obamacare.
When you say that there's nothing in the Constitution that spells out a federal health care plan, does that mean we should not have Medicare or Medicaid?
Well, Medicare and Medicaid are longstanding programs that the courts have reviewed and that Congress has reviewed, and they are social welfare programs that are broadly applicable. But a healthcare program like Obamacare that affects everyone is not spelled out in the Constitution.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Congressman Justin Amash. He's seeking his third term in the U.S. House, representing Battle Creek and Grand Rapids. We are speaking at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in downtown Battle Creek, and Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman is here as well. Jennifer.
Ellis seems to be garnering some support from the business community, and I believe an article had said something about a decrease in communication or cooperation with your office and business owners. I know that that's been the your office has said we do take every constituent that comes in our office fairly. I mean, is there any concern from you that the business community might not be rallying behind you or?
No, there's a big difference between small businesses and the business community versus the Chamber of Commerce and some of the interest groups that come to Washington. Small businesses and others who come to our office for assistance are always given help. Anyone is welcome to come to my office. I take visits with all sorts of people from all different groups and all different walks of life. And we always do our best to help our constituents. So we feel we have a very good record. I've got good constituent services and feel positive about the relationship that we have with the business community. You're not going to make every single person happy. And certainly I've always opposed earmarks. I oppose special benefits for corporations, and that's going to upset some people.
But as you say, you are definitely on the smaller government scale of Republican. Many people would say libertarian leaning.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, does that ever, the idea that government should be small and limited, ever come into conflict with the idea of providing constituent service?
No. My job as a representative is to help my constituents with constituent services, regardless of what my policy position is on the issue. So if someone comes to us and asks for help, we do our best to help them. On the other hand, I'm not going to seek earmarks for anyone. I'm not going to seek special favors for anyone. That's how we've gotten into a mess in Washington and in Lansing. And I think we need to have a system where government is smaller, especially at the federal level. And let's not forget that we have different levels of government. I think the federal government needs to stick to the what's enumerated in the Constitution. And there are things that can be done at the state level that I would object to at the federal level, but would be okay at the state level. And there are even more things at the local level that might be done that might be objectionable at the state level or the federal level.
You're okay with government being a little bigger as you get closer to home?
Yes. And that makes sense because when government is closer to home, you have more control over it. So the tax dollars you provide to the government are less likely to be funneled elsewhere. They're more likely to help people in your area. So there's less of a chance for the kind of gamesmanship that goes on in Washington, where we often pay taxes to the federal government. It's shifted all the way over to California or Alaska for projects that are totally inappropriate. If it's local money kept locally, then it's easy to hold people accountable. It's a smaller group of voters and constituents, and it's easy to see what's going on.
Jennifer.
Some have described this primary as, the traditional Republican candidate versus a libertarian leaning. Your opponent, Brian Ellis, has said, well, I don't necessarily think I'm out to get to another party. And he argues that he shares many of the same values as the Tea Party. Do you think that's a fair characterization of the race? Or
I don't think the Tea Party agrees with that assessment of his own candidacy. I won't speak for people in the Tea Party, but I would tell you that he has very little support among conservatives and among Tea Party people. Mainstream Republicans hold my views. He's not a traditional Republican in any real sense of the word. What he is a political class, sort of Washington establishment candidate. It's almost without a party. And the kind of things I'm pushing for, limited government, economic freedom, individual liberty, are the hallmarks of the Republican Party. And the Republican Party has strayed from those principles for many years, but increasingly it is moving back in that direction. And when I go to town halls, overwhelmingly Republicans agree with my positions and agree with my view of government. I feel very comfortable as a Republican and feel that mainstream Republicans hold my views and would oppose his views. I mean, he supports Common Core. He supports Obamacare expansion in Michigan through Medicaid expansion. He supports corporate welfare. He supports NSA spying on Americans. These are not positions that most Republicans hold. If you polled those positions, they would probably get less than 10% approval among Republicans.
Now, he does say that he's for repealing Obamacare, and he, at least in the interview with us, said that he was fine with the NSA spying overseas, but opposed it at home.
Well, you can't be for repealing Obamacare, but be for Medicaid expansion, which is part of Obamacare. So if he's okay with that, that's a major portion of Obamacare that he is okay not repealing. I'm for full repeal of Obamacare. His claim about NSA spying is false. His very own ad says that he supports full reauthorization of the Patriot Act without any reforms. Well, full reauthorization of the Patriot Act without any reforms means the NSA can continue to spy on Americans using Section 215 of the Patriot Act. Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which I voted no on, is what he's criticizing me on. He's criticizing my opposition to reauthorizing Section 215 of the Patriot Act. That's the section that the NSA uses to spy on ordinary Americans. So he can't have it both ways, where he criticizes me for opposing a section, and then he says he's also not for NSA spying. He's for it if he supports that section.
Do you see this race as being about the direction of the Republican Party going forward?
Yes, and Brian Ellis has already lost, and the establishment have already lost this race.
How so?
Well, first, I'm confident we'll win by a large margin on Election Day. But mainstream Republicans don't agree with people like Brian Ellis. Mainstream Americans don't agree with people like Brian Ellis. If you look at the attacks, his distortions, his attacks during the campaign, he is attacking me for holding mainstream positions. And the bottom line is they've already lost. That's why over and over what you're seeing is establishment candidates in Congress who are actually having tougher and tougher elections. You saw Eric Cantor lose his race while outspending his opponent by a crazy amount. It might have been 20 to 1. And he still lost that race because their views don't represent ordinary Americans. Regular people want to feel represented in Congress. They don't want members of Congress, certainly members of the Republican Party, representing just special interests, corporate interests, Wall Street, people who have connections, wealthy people. And that's the group that Brian Ellis really comes from and really wants to represent. I mean, his criticisms against me have been that I'm too independent and that I represent regular people.
Now, you say you're confident you're going to win. I'm sure Eric Cantor was pretty confident he was going to win as well. If there is a surprise in early August in your defeat in the Republican primary, what does that say about the direction of the party going forward?
Well, I don't think it's possible, but it would be a bad omen for the party. The reason I'm confident is because I know Republican voters. I know ordinary Americans. I spend a lot of time in the district talking to people. All you have to do is walk around and ask about issues, and you can figure out where people are. And Republicans don't support his ideas. As I said, the establishment has already lost. Their numbers are dwindling. They're basically on the run. And a lot of them are retiring. And in no time, you'll have more independent-minded, more liberty-minded Republicans who care about civil liberties, who want to fight corporate welfare and want to stand up for ordinary Americans leading the party.
Congressman Justin Amash, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much.
Justin Amash is seeking his third term in the U.S. House, representing Battle Creek and Grand Rapids in the 3rd District. We've been speaking to him today at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in downtown Battle Creek. And thanks again to Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.